This episode brought to you by Beta Brand, the San Francisco-based source for crowdfunded clothing. You can visit in person the next time you're in San Francisco, or stop by anytime online to shop bestsellers like dress pant yoga pants and now yoga jeans. And when you do, use the code SPIRIT20 to save 20% off anything on the site. As regular listeners to the show know, we at Spirit of 608 appreciate Beta Brand's support, their support of female entrepreneurs and women building businesses in Fest. We're big fans of the company, what they do, and we think you will be too. So check them out at betabrand.com. This and every episode also brought to you with support from Prestope by the Spirit of 608. It's the new affordable, interactive, and community-driven alternative to traditional PR and media relations built with care by us, especially for Fest brands. Visit the site to find out more about how we're able to bring our members one-on-one help and feedback from media experts, including direct answers to your questions, recommended daily media outreach tasks curated by us, especially with your business in mind, a DIY PR resource library, exclusive media ops, and connections with other Fest founders, plus much more, all for a monthly cost that's less than what a single hour of professional PR or media consulting would cost your brand. So check it out at prestope.com. That's PRESSDOPE.com.
Spirit of 608, episode 100.
Okay, so how would you celebrate, AJ?
I would celebrate with 100 hugs to mom.
Aw, that's so nice.
Same.
Walker, you would do same?
And I would also want to shake my booty 100 times and get 100 pieces of candy for the whole family. And also buy 100 emojis and say and do 100 jumping jacks. And remember, shake your booty 100 times. Shake your booty 100 times.
Oh my god. Okay, well, priorities.
That's my turn. And we would get a mom, if she runs out of wine, we would get mom new wine.
You mean 100 bottles of wine?
Uh oh. Okay.
You could put toys inside a present for mom.
Sounds good. You're listening to the Spirit of 608 podcast. I'm your host, Lorraine Sanders. Keep listening for stories, tips, and advice from women at the forefront of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. I call it Fest, and it's the future. Hey, and welcome to today's show. And it's episode 100. And when I say today's show, what I really mean is the show of the last 2 weeks, because it has taken over my life in a lot of ways for more time than an episode usually does. And that's because this episode is a different format. It's a different setup than your usual Spirit of 608 episode, and I hope you'll like it. I hope it'll bring you, you know, some insight if you want it, or, you know, extra color into what is happening here at the Spirit of 608, and also what is happening as the Spirit of 608 has sort of morphed and grown and launched Presto by Spirit of 608. But it's also a bit of a collage, because we've got a couple of different segments, and we're bringing in some voices from the wider Spirit of 608 family. We've got some comments and questions up ahead later in the show, and I hope that as you listen, that you'll be able to take something away from these different kinds of conversations, and that, you know, as I get into a little bit of the experience of what's kind of gone on for the past 100 episodes of the Spirit of 608 podcast, that, you know, even though I'm not specifically talking about building a fashion brand, that you'll be able to get something from the process that I've gone through, the experience that I've gone through, and the experience that I think many people pursuing an entrepreneurial path will end up running into at some point or another. So we've got a couple of segments. One, the first one really focused on what has happened since launching the very first Spirit of 608 episode and how we've gotten to where we are today. And then after that, an episode that is more about how I got to the launch and not just like the macro, but more in the weeds, because I think, and I was having this conversation or I made a comment about this earlier this week when I was participating in a live mastermind conversation with Shannon of Factory 45 and Nicole of Startup Fashion, that I think quite a number of listeners were also of this podcast were also there and present for that. So they'll know what I'm talking about. But we had a little bit of a discussion. A lot of times you hear people's stories about how things came to be and you don't really hear actually what happened. It's like, oh yeah, then I just started this company and I got these great advisors and funding and this is how I met this partner who helped me do this. And they don't really tell you the little moments. And so the second segment is more about those little moments and is with me in conversation with a very special person in my podcasting life. So stick around for that. And first up though, an interview, not where I'm doing the interviewing, but where I'm being interviewed. Kind of an unusual situation for me, and even more unusual is who I'm being interviewed by. I hope you will enjoy hearing from Brian Grabowski. He's a digital marketing expert, has been in the game since basically the beginning of any digital marketing ever. And he's with 3Q, an agency based out of San Francisco. But more importantly, he is also my husband and my biggest supporter in all of this. And when I was trying to figure out what to do about the 100th episode, I had some podcast buddies who will be coming up later in the show say to me, you really should do something different where you're not interviewing somebody else. You know, you're getting your voice onto the show. And Brian, when he realized I was kind of chewing on what to do and not really sure, he said, well, why don't you let me interview you? And at first I thought, that's crazy. Like, how am I going to let my husband interview me? That's so weird. And then I started to think about it. He has a great radio voice, and I think he knows what he's talking about. And as he pointed out, he probably knows the show better than anybody else, maybe other than me. And, you know, it's really true. Not only has he listened to almost every episode of the show, he hears me talk about it constantly and has been here for the entire ride. And I have to confess that, you know, when people tell you that they 100% absolutely get what you're talking about and you think, okay, sure you do, but you're not really sure if they absolutely 100% get what you're talking about. Well, this conversation proves to me that he absolutely 100% gets what I'm talking about and also gets Fest and the entire mission and what I've been trying to build over the last year and a half. So I hope you'll enjoy this conversation. Stick around to the end for some spot-on digital marketing advice for Fest founders that he brings to the show. And now on to that conversation.
Hi, Lorraine. Welcome to the Spirit of 608 podcast.
Hi, Brian.
Well, I appreciate you having me. I'm honored to be here on this monumental 100th episode. 100 episodes is quite an accomplishment. So congratulations.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I'm a little nervous about having you interview me because not only do you have the perfect radio voice, I'm afraid that the audience is going to decide that they want to defect and only listen to you. But also, you know, it's weird to be interviewed for the podcast in which I'm usually doing the interviewing.
Well, I think it'll be fun. And, you know, a little known fact that I've actually listened to almost all of the podcasts at this point. I think I'm on 86 out of 100.
Are you really? I thought you were like deep in the 60s.
No. I've made a lot of progress. I've been getting, been getting to the gym more this year. So that's really helped me get caught up.
Okay. Well, that's good on multiple fronts. And, you know, I don't check. I don't keep tabs on where you are really, because I just don't.
Well, I know you talked about it a lot in the earlier days and you do touch on it from time to time, but for some of your newer listeners, maybe you could just give them, you know, some background again about what led you to create this podcast to begin with. And then ultimately, why did you decide to build on top of it with a tool like Presto?
Sure. So two-part question. First part, like most things, it's not some neatly tied up linear progression from being a journalist covering the fashion space and then starting the podcast. So I'll try to explain it succinctly. Anybody who wants to know what I was thinking about the process when I started the podcast can listen to the very first episode, because I talk a little bit about how I got to the launch in that and what the inspiration for it was and the motivation for it was. But essentially, I was covering the fashion space and mostly the business side with the last couple of years I was reporting. And more, I realized that I was becoming more of an advocate than an actual reporter. I mean, that's what, when I really, you know, I'd have these like insecure moments about myself as a journalist. And I'm like, I'm not that good of a journalist. I actually don't even feel that proud of what I'm covering. And when I started to unpack it, and it's taken me a while to really see it this way, but I think a lot of my insecurity was coming from the fact that I wasn't really doing this great investigative journalism. I was actually writing about people that I thought more people should know about. And so I was in that advocacy role. And I realized that what I really wanted to do was put all of my time into elevating these brands and talking about these brands that I think are doing things in a more ethical and positive and innovative way in the fashion industry. So I really just switched over to that being my mission. And as you know, I mean, it took a lot longer than just switching over and starting a podcast, but that was really why I did it. And then with Press Dope itself, one of the things that most people ask me, you know, if I get a business related question, it's usually related to media and how, as a founder, whoever I'm speaking to can get the word out about what they're doing. And I kept getting asked this over and over again. And I realized that there was a real need for a different kind of media outreach process for these startup brands and brands who are really operating on lean team and budget resources. And at the same time, when I was working with brands, I kept noticing so many similar things that they all needed. And with what is available to us with technology today, it just made sense to me that there's a different way to go about doing media outreach, especially at this stage in business. I mean, as you know, I do think there are a lot of times when hiring a PR agency or having a formalized relationship with a professional PR person, whether they're in-house or, you know, they're in an agency, I think that can be really, really useful. But there's also a need for this baseline support around media strategy that just was not there. So that's what we're trying to bring to these founders. It's my way of trying to build a business arm of the Spirit of 608 that can not only help continue the mission of the Spirit of 608, but can also support the Spirit of 608 as a business. So there's got a lot of different facets to it. But I don't know, does that, what do you think about that explanation? Because you hear about it day in and day out.
Well, I think it's impressive. I don't think there's that high of a percentage of people that get to take a combination of what they are actually interested in from a subject matter expertise and then apply their background and expertise and be able to bring those things together and try to make a career out of it. Most of us don't have that opportunity. So the fact that, you know, you jumped in with both feet and are able to do something that you actually enjoy, just really cool. I think it's very impressive.
Well, I mean, thank you. But then at the same time, as you know, it is amazing opportunity. I feel very lucky that I have this option to not have to make my decisions around going and working a regular 9-to-5 job, and that I was able to take, I mean, let's be honest, I've taken like a year plus pause from, you know, generating the kind of income I was making before, you know, specifically so I could do this. And I'm in a really lucky position because of that. You're a big part of why that is, because we're a family unit and you're very supportive of me going and doing this. But all of that, you know, kind of as the background to this, you know, just in the day-to-day itself, I mean, yeah, it's inspiring and cool. But I mean, you know, the last couple of weeks, I mean, there is stuff like every day that is just, oh, it is one thing to sit and interview entrepreneurs about their experience and feel inspired and motivated by what they've said. It's another thing entirely to be, you know, doing it and to be feeling, I mean, there's just times when, man, like, I'm like, okay, I'm not sure that I can emotionally or mentally deal with this. And then you just kind of have to, and you just keep going. But it's definitely not been all roses or unicorns and ice cream, as I often say.
Well, it's definitely a moving target. And I obviously every week and every month is different than I think you expected it to be as you set out. But looking back over the last 18 months, obviously you're in a very different place than you were when you launched the show. I mean, maybe you could tell listeners a little bit about what are some of the things you've taken away from interviewing all of the upwards of 100 guests you've had on the show, and maybe even share something that was the more surprising theme that has come out of all these interviews.
Yeah, well, I mean, first I'll say the dirty little secret of all of this is that I absolutely need to hear these interviews as much as anybody else. I mean, I created the show. I didn't realize I was doing it in a strategic way in any, you know, sense of it when I was doing it. But in retrospect, I mean, I thrive off of hearing conversations like this. So I very much created what I need in my own life. And, you know, the thing that has been surprising to me, but it just the most sort of common theme among all of these female founders that I've talked to, is that their success and their ability to continue with their businesses and grow them, it doesn't come down to the ideas, really. It doesn't come down to being wealthy or in the right place at the right time, as much as it comes down to their mindset. And I hate, you know, I'm like pretty cynical in a lot of ways, and I'm not very woo-woo about a lot of stuff, but I have been completely transformed in a way by listening to all these women, because it's their mental confidence and stability is really what underlies their ability to continue day after day, pushing something forward when all of the mundane challenges and barriers crop up and tell them that this isn't going to work. You know, they keep going through it. And I mean, I heard that from probably 75% of the people that have been on the show.
So, you know, a question that actually just popped into my head, obviously you've really tried to brand this idea of Fest on the show and with your listeners and build a community around it. But when you went into this, it's clear that there is an appetite and there really is a community that was waiting to come together around this concept. But were you 100% confident that this existed when you launched the show?
I mean, I saw the intersection of it because I kept saying it to people. I mean, I've said this a couple of times in various different places when I've been interviewed, and it's true. I was having to reach out to lots of people before the show even launched to ask them to be on. And when I would do that, I'd have to explain the concept of the show, that it wasn't a fashion, you know, trend-based interview podcast. It was about the intersection of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. And I kept, it's a mouthful. And one day I was looking at an email I was writing, and I was like, wow, that actually makes a pretty cool acronym. Let's go with that. So I saw it and I think it is there. I do think that it's fair to criticize me for it, you know, in that you could probably, I've had some people say, well, you could pretty much put these days any business in there. You know, almost any business nowadays has some ties to technology and then entrepreneurship, you know, obviously. But I do think that what we're seeing more and more of right now, I mean, especially if you look in the Facebook group that the Spirit of 608 has, there's women who are out there building these companies and they're very entrepreneurial and they are trying to use all of the efficiencies and ways of communication that technology is bringing us today to grow brands in an entirely different way than they would have been grown, I mean, even 5 years ago. So I think it's very much a real thing. I do think if we're successful, that it'll cease to be a thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's probably got about a 5-year shelf life as I see it, because eventually all of the fashion companies that we see out there are going to have more ethical and sustainable practices. And they're all going to have, I mean, every company is essentially a technology company these days. And if they're not, they're going to be struggling.
I agree with that. And so, I mean, it seems like this Fest intersection has really been the guiding principle to help you figure out who you should and who you shouldn't interview on the podcast. But you know, maybe you could share again what a little bit about what goes into your decision-making process about who you select to interview on the show and who you might think about, but ultimately decide not to.
Yeah. So this is kind of a tricky one because it shifted. You know, when I started out with the Spirit of 608 podcast, I spent the summer before the show launched interviewing, I think I did like 35 interviews. And when I was reaching out to guests and approaching people, I was doing it very much as I would from a journalistic standpoint. I mean, I was trying to get a good mix of people with different perspectives, different economic backgrounds, different ethnicities, and different types of businesses, and also located in different places around the world. So I was approaching it very much like I would if I was creating a publication. I mean, a podcast is a publication in many ways. And so as time has gone on, though, with the community part of this whole thing growing, you know, people that are in the Spirit of 628 community and who are listeners are not really as distinct as they are from guests, you know, as they were in the past, if that makes sense. And when I started out, I felt like there was a much more distinct line. There were people listening on one side, and then there were the guests on the other side. And now it's becoming a lot, the line is getting blurred. And so that's why at the beginning of this year, I started to do, and there'll be more of these coming out as the year goes on, but I started two new types of formats to bring more listeners onto the show. And when they come on the show, they are always related to Fest as well, but they might be in different stages of their business or maybe not as practiced with being on a live interview type show format as maybe other guests I would have invited on in the past. And they come on and do either a media coaching session, and it's a way for them to get free coaching for an hour for me. And then also, I think it's really inspiring for other people to hear them talk about what they're going through. I know as a listener of many podcasts that use that format, I get so much out of hearing those businesses and actually identify with the women that come on as coaching people on different shows. And then we also have been doing these training episodes. I'm not sure if you've gotten up high enough in the in the archives to get to one, because I think the first one's 94 with Dara of Brevity Brand. And she came on and taught us her super ninja Google Analytics PR tricks that she has developed in trying to promote her new Fest brand. So I think adding those two formats has been a whole new way that we're bringing guests on. And I hope to continue that. And we'll probably continue to shift it over time as the community grows and the interest of the community shift and change. I very much want to bring guests that listeners are going to, you know, feel like they got value from hearing. And, you know, I'm trying to be kind of, what is it? You're like the Lauza fan, like the river. I try to be,
you want to be low like the valley?
No, I thought there was some water quote where I'm like trying to, you know, just trying to go with the flow, Brian.
Well, so far so good. And obviously you got to follow what listeners are looking for. And when you look at Fest, you know, the F in Fest stands for fashion, but you could also argue with the way you run the show that it stands for female, right? And, you know, there's nothing in Fest that necessarily should lead you down the path of only really interviewing female entrepreneurs on the show, but that's what you've done so far. Why have you made that choice? Do you expect it to continue? And if so, why do you feel that's an important part of the identity of the show?
Yeah, you know, it's a hard question, because when I started this whole thing, I was coming very much from the perspective of somebody who'd sat in the San Francisco Bay Area for 15 years and watched as I thought that, you know, there's a real disconnect and a divide between the female experience in trying to grow a business, specifically in the tech landscape, and then in what men experience. And I had a lot of incidents where I felt that I was treated differently. And, you know, I'm not like super sour grapes about it, but I just started to really get, you know, fired up about the gender stuff, you know, from the reporting standpoint. I mean, you know, I've told you I had many experiences where I was out and I'm like, man, the fact that I'm a woman in this situation is making it a lot harder for me, you know? And so I kind of, that like little late 90s riot girl part of me wanted to start something that is for the ladies, you know? This is a show to try to elevate women. And guys, I'm sorry, you have a lot of opportunities. Go find those opportunities, you know? This is for the women. And I felt totally fine about it. But as time has gone on, you know, I realized there's some really inspiring guys out there who have cool companies and would probably be really valuable for women who are listening to hear. And I haven't really brought them on yet because I have a list of over 160 interview prospects inside of a spreadsheet that I keep ticking through. You know, I don't really have a need for them to come on. I guess I'm kind of waiting for some guy to come and say, hey, I really want to be on your show. I mean, I don't think I would turn somebody down if they really had a passionate desire to be on the show and they were going to be great for the audience. But I'm not going to go specifically court them. But I mean, I have no issue with guys in general. I mean, obviously, we have a lot of dudes who've been huge supporters of the show. And, you know, the show, it wouldn't exist without all the great guys out there in our world. So
yeah, so I think something that, you know, as we talk about the growth of the show, and it might not always follow the path that you set out for in the beginning, but I think and you look at your personal track record, and not only with the spirit of 608, with growing the podcast, really having a sizable community that you built around a Facebook group, but even before this, several years ago, building a different brand called SFND Fashion that really gained a pretty sizable social following, as well as a readership on the website as you were publishing content. You have, at this point, established a track record of being successful at building a community. You've got traction across the board multiple times. I think it would be interesting for listeners to know, what are tips that you might have that have allowed you to be successful there and allow them to maybe more quickly build a community, and the types of things that have gone right and maybe didn't go right in terms of being able to achieve that?
All right. So it's interesting you ask me this, because I don't feel like I'm that great at building a community. I actually think I'm pretty bad at it. I mean, I've watched other people do this, and they have Facebook groups with thousands of members, and, you know, their Instagrams are 100,000 people, and they, you know, have a very fan-based community that's large and will do things every time they suggest a product, everybody goes and buys it. And if they're at an event, everybody flocks to it. And that's not what I am able to do. And that's not what I've done in the past. And I think the difference is that for me, and I feel like I have to preface all of this because, like I said, I don't necessarily know if I'm that great of a community builder, but what I tend to do is try to create a space for people to get together around an idea that I think is underserved. So back with SF Indie Fashion, it really came out of a, you know, interest of mine, which was trying to shop more independent and local designers and know where all of my stuff was coming from, and maybe also justify my shopping habit a little more, make it a little bit more meaningful. And so I put all the information I could find about those types of events and, you know, independent designers in different stores locally in the San Francisco area up on a blog so that other people could have that information as well. And not that we want to go back into like the BC era, but just to point this out, because I was thinking about it the other day and I was like, oh, I have this weird thread of doing this over and over again in my life. Back in college, I tried to create a publication where it was a resource for all of the writing opportunities that students would find on campus. And at the time, it was not really common to have like a web-based publication. And I went around and interviewed all these different little zines and magazines and poetry clubs and all this disparate stuff. I was trying to put it in one place so that if you were somebody that showed up on the college campus as a freshman and you wanted to figure out, hey, how can I be a writer here? Where am I going to find all the places I need to find? You could do it really quickly without having to spend a year investigating everything like I did. And of course, the publication never came to be because I left my computer on the front seat of my car, drove to New York, like first time, decided to drive to New York and parked it on the street at a metered parking space. And then just like walked out of the street, went to go get a coffee or something, came back totally gone. Of course, with like everything else that was in the car. So that publication never came to be. But the point is that I have always tried to create something of interest or value to a population that I feel like I identify with, and they don't have that information at their fingertips. And so that's sort of what the Spirit of 608's community is about. I think what works well is really, for me, it's just giving people real content that is good and is consistent over time, and they know they can come to you and they feel like they can trust you and that you're not doing it because it's all about you and, you know, all of that stuff. But at the same time, I mean, the downside to that is that it's harder to monetize it. It's harder to build a business around it. I think it's easier, you know, you asked me for tips. If somebody is thinking about building a community, when you get people to view you as a little bit less accessible, harder to reach, aspirational, I think it's easier to monetize and to rally large numbers of people to be curious about you. But that's never really felt like a good fit to me. And I don't know, I'm a little torn about it. But I think at the end of the day, you have to just go with what you feel compelled to do each day and what feels right to you.
Well, you're a trend spotter. I think when you talk about all of those things in advance, you know, a driving force on why you created all these things is because you felt it would be useful and it didn't exist, but you knew that there was a demand for it. So, I mean, it sounds like that's what really gave you a head start. And I guess if there's one word I would use to talk about your build a community, it would be the word authentic, right? You know, that's, you try to stay true to yourself, and that's really what's allowed you to be successful. And again, to your point, maybe there would have been ways to scale faster if you would have compromised that, but that's not really who you are.
Yeah. And, you know, at the same time, I mean, authentic, but I also struggle with how real to be with people because I'm not the most like vanilla person. I mean, I don't put out everything about my life because I sometimes am a little concerned about whether or not that's going to turn people off or offend them. And I could probably go farther in the, this is the real deal, the life of Lorraine Sanders direction, but I'm not especially great at that. It doesn't feel super comfortable to me. But, you know, I think people that are able to do that, I mean, I oftentimes respond to their communities really, really positively. Like I was looking at this girl's Instagram account yesterday, and she's a really big ethical, sustainable fashion personality in Australia. And on her profile, it literally is like, don't be a dick. Support the earth. And I was like, that's awesome. That is so hilarious. But I just can't bring myself to go there because I don't know, you know, you have all these insecurities in the back of your head. And then there's the fact that you have kids and your dad reads my tweets and all of that stuff. So I think that's another choice that people thinking about building community around their brands have to consider. And there's no right answer. But again, you have to pick what feels good to you at 2 a.m. when you wake up and you're stressing about everything.
Well, that answers a great transition to, I think, my next question around, you know, I think it's an unknown, it's an unexpected character trait of someone who starts a podcast is that you really are an introvert person by nature, right? I mean, what can you say out there, Ben, like, how have you overcome your fear about putting yourself out there with something like a podcast or even getting over your fear of networking in general? And, you know, what advice would you have for other introverts?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not over any of those fears.
I know it's a day-to-day struggle, but when you look at
where
you were 2 years ago and 4 years ago and 10 years ago, it's night and day.
Yeah. I mean, you remember, I don't know if you remember this, but there was that time that I sat in the car in Hayes Valley in San Francisco before an event and I was crying because I didn't want to go in. It was like a craft meetup. It was like not even like I wasn't even there on an official business for a publication. I was there to write about it for my blog. And I called you crying. I was like, I can't do this. I hate going into crowds. I have crippling social anxiety. And you were just like, you know, you have a choice. You either go in and see what happens or you drive home. You know,
and hang out with me. Hang out with me at home.
Yeah, you're like, you just sort of broke it down. I was like, well, I guess I'm just going to go in there like a crazy freak who has red eyes. And everyone's like, what's wrong with this girl? And I went and it was not particularly fun. I didn't have some amazing experience. But I think the thing for me is always that the more you go and put yourself in uncomfortable situations, you get better at dealing with being in an uncomfortable situation. And what I've realized over time is that nobody is really paying that much attention to you. I mean, it can seem in the moment like this, you know, crazy echo in your head of oh my God, that girl is standing in the corner talking to no one. And why is she looking at that painting on the wall instead of talking to anyone? And what is she doing here? But then you leave, you know, after the event is done and you realize everyone else goes on about their lives. And it's just, you have to just keep going through it. And sometimes those events that you go to and, you know, you think it's going to be terrible, it ends up being the coolest thing. And you meet somebody that ends up being a really big deal in your life in the future. And then sometimes you go and it's like, ugh, why did I spend the time to do that? But you have to be out there or else, you know, you're not creating opportunities for yourself. So that's number one. And then number two, for me, I mean, podcasting is a great format for somebody who's an introvert. And I really love the fact that I'm the way that I am. I've realized over time that setting up an interview and having a structure around a conversation, meaning we've discussed the fact that we're going to talk, we have a scheduled time, we know that we've agreed to do this and they understand where I'm coming from. And, you know, it takes a lot of the strain off of it for me mentally, you know? And so I can go and do the conversation and it's just about what the conversation is. It's not about what's in my head or, you know, ego or anything like that. And I think that the reason I go on a tangent about that is because I think it's really important, especially as you get older, you realize kind of who you are and you have to set up systems for yourself that are going to put you in a position to succeed, given all of your flaws and foibles and insecurities and problems. I mean, none of us are perfect. And the idea isn't to get yourself to a place where you're just killing it every day. For me, I really set up my life so that, I mean, I know what my issues are. And then I try to manufacture kind of support structure around that so that I can succeed, even though I'm this flawed, like convoluted person. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, I do.
I know you don't have to set up any structure for yourself because you have no flaws.
You know, I'd rather die than go into a room full of people that I don't know and just stand there. I'm not necessarily that different, but I never had the desire to get over my fear, right? I'm comfortable in my introversion, and I think I'll probably stay there for a while. So I think it's impressive for someone who puts themselves out of their comfort zone in order to achieve a goal.
Yeah, and I will say, you know, you and me together at an event is the worst because we're both just standing there like being introverted together, and then I'm getting mad at you because I'm like, be your normal self, and you're like, and then I look like the extrovert typically. Like, I think most people who meet me, especially in a out and about setting, will think that I'm pretty extroverted and confident, and really that's a different story than what goes on in my own head, and I find all of those interactions to be really, really exhausting. I have to like decompress from them, but that's just how it is. And you got to just deal with yourself. You got to deal with what you have.
So this has been a real treat. This has been fun.
Well, I mean, you know, I have to ask you, since we have you on the podcast, and you know, you're always really evasive with me when I ask you these questions. I know you're trying to avoid having to give me free business advice, but can I ask you a couple of questions about the digital marketing space, since that's the land from which you hail and many of the listeners that we have are super interested in that stuff?
We'd be happy to.
Okay. So I don't have any planned questions here. So I'll just tell you right off the bat that these might be kind of vague, but I talk to a lot of founders who are in the first 2 years of their business, maybe first four, but generally pretty early stage, and they know they have to do advertising. I mean, these days, if you don't put money behind something on Facebook, you're just toast. But they're all competing against these brands that, you know, the companies that you work with, your agency works with, are spending thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars a month. And that's not what the budgets of these companies are going to allow. So is it even worth it to jump in and to be putting a bunch of budget into Google or Facebook, given that they're up against these much larger, you know, really well-funded companies in the same space?
I think the answer is case by case, right? And I think that, you know, when you looked at a couple of years ago, when this was primarily an option of Google or nothing, the option was tough because a lot of people just kind of wanted to try it because it really did feel like the only game in town where you could ultimately invest money and see a return on those dollars. Google is tricky, especially for an aspiring brand. If you don't have brand recognition, you really need to be very specific about where you're marketing, what types of keywords you're advertising that are really unique to your brand. And where if someone was to do a search, you know, ultimately they look at the page and you would stick out and ultimately have an experience on your website where they'd be able to buy. I think a lot of people put the cart before the horse and start advertising before their website really can sell a product on its own. If someone has never heard of your brand, it arrives on your website because you have what they're looking for, and you're confident that the experience will allow them to make a purchase, then you're probably ready. But I'd still request that you start slow and you start with a very narrow, focused set of things that you're trying to advertise on from a search perspective. I think the good thing for aspiring entrepreneurs is that Facebook marketing and social marketing in general has become a much more viable option. And the difference with marketing on Facebook against marketing on Google is Facebook is primarily an audience vehicle, meaning that you're going after an audience based on interests and demographics that are going to be relevant to your brand. And that's been available on Facebook for several years now. And that on its own is great. But what really is great on Facebook is being able to market against people that are already in your database, and then being able to upload that list of people to Facebook and then market against people that look very closely to your target list. That's what's really changed the game in social advertising and why Facebook continues to blow out their quarterly earnings goals, you know, quarter in, quarter out. It's because of that specific way of marketing. It's really finding people that look exactly like your seed list of customers in order to find other new customers. And that's a very effective tactic. And again, once your website is in order, I think a very viable way to market for entrepreneurs.
Well, and what you're talking about is something I've heard some founders discuss in relation to their PR and media, where they've used PR hits to draw people to their site and they've gotten them on a mailing list, and then they're able to then upload those people who may not even be customers necessarily, but they've shown themselves to be interested by coming from a media mention to the site to learn more, and then they're able to retarget to them.
Yep.
On an ongoing basis. So I've, you know, just because I'm interested in the media stuff, I've found that to be really fascinating. I guess my last question for you, it's actually only my second question. I can't believe I've only asked two questions in a conversation, but is, you know, obviously these brands aren't going to come out and work with an agency like yours, like 3Q, because it's, you know, for a different size and stage of business. But do you think that this stuff has gotten complicated enough that you really need to go work with somebody who understands all the ins and the outs? Or is it still, you know, like pretty self-explanatory where you can DIY it and not make major mistakes?
I think if you're talking about something where you're talking about hundreds or in the low thousands of dollars a month, I think it is possible to do it on your own and do it effectively. It is always good to, if you know somebody that has deeper experience in the area, to come in and take a look and vet what you're doing and give you some feedback. But the day-to-day management of your advertising should be DIY, or it can be DIY. I think once you talk about some reasonable scale, you know, $10,000 or more per month, you really want, and something that where you really are making daily changes to your setup and what you're doing, I think it can really, it's worth it to pay a consultant or a professional to assist you. And, you know, really the main advantage to that is the consultant or the agency or the company has seen this across 10, 20, 100 different advertiser accounts, tried different things, had different experiences, and they just have more repetitions to understand what should work and what shouldn't work. And that is worth the fee that they take in order to allow your dollars to be more wisely invested.
What a good answer. Are you sure that you're not secretly podcasting on the side?
No, but it's my job to convince people to work with my company. So I do have practice at that. I'm well rehearsed. I was just doing it yesterday. So it's fresh in my mind.
Okay, well, so I guess we've reached the end of our conversation. You know, I always close out with a series of questions, but how are we going to do this here?
You want me to ask the series of questions?
No. I mean, I'm very much like, maybe I'll ask you one last question and then you can ask me one last question. No, that's, what are we doing? That's ridiculous.
How about I just ask you one last question?
Okay.
So you touched on this a couple of times, but this is the 100th episode of the show, right? Where do you hope to be at episode 200? And, you know, what can listeners expect in terms of your roadmap for where you want the show to go?
God. Well, I mean, Brian, you know, I wake up every day right now, and if I have a roadmap between the time I open my eyes in the morning and lunch, it's a miracle. So I am not sure what's going to happen between now and 200. I do know that I'm completely obsessed and addicted to producing content this way. And I have seen how sticking with it and continuing to grow with an audience over time is really one of the most fulfilling things I can imagine when you are building a media-based business. So there's no doubt that I'll continue doing it. I expect by the time we get to 200, the show itself will, you know, probably have morphed, and the format will be somewhat different in terms of how I go through the conversations. You'll probably see different kinds of guests. And I think that it's also going to be increasingly connected to the Spirit of 608 community. You know, we're going to be holding a live event in the Bay Area in July. And so, you know, I see more and more of that happening as well, where the podcast is an integral part of something larger. Whereas for the first 100 episodes, the podcast has really been the flagship thing. And so I guess that's where I see it going, that the podcast is going to be more integrated into a bigger machine.
Well, it's been fun to watch it grow. And I'm excited to be your biggest cheerleader here over the next 100 episodes as well.
I want to see your best cheerleading move the next time I see you when you get home.
That's easy. That's easy. I'll work on that between now and then.
Bye.
Bye.
So that was definitely interesting. I don't know why, but I really thought it was going to be a super awkward conversation for some reason, and it just totally wasn't. And who knows? Maybe he'll show back up on the podcast at some point in the future. Next up, this segment is different and hopefully in a good way. As many of you know, and maybe have heard, earlier this year, we released the bonus episodes featuring replays of the Underclothes podcast, which was my first podcast, which I did starting in, I think it was 2014, with Haley Stone. It was my co-host. She's fabulously hilarious, amazing person, now also a yoga instructor. I have to give her endless props for that. And so she's coming on to ask me a few questions. And full disclosure, we went way, I mean, we had so much more that we talked about that we recorded than what you're going to hear here. And so maybe some of it will pop up on future shows or as part of future bonus episodes. So here we go. Haley interviews me on my first job, an interview I'll never forget, and why we stopped recording Underclothes and I moved on to the Spirit of 608.
What was your first job? And you can take this back all the way to before your professional career. You know, like if you had a job as a teenager that was particularly amusing or interesting.
My first job, there is a story to that. I was one of these kids that I didn't have a job during high school because my parents were like, school is your job. And thank you to them, if they're ever listening to this, that they let me study in all of this stuff. But what it led to is that when I graduated from high school, I was going to college in the fall and frankly, I had not really thought about what I was going to do for the summer. My plans included lying around by the pool, hanging out with my friends, and going to like the 7-Eleven. Do you know what I mean? I had no intentions of actually becoming gainfully employed. So I was lying by the pool one morning. It was probably like 9:30 a.m. And my dad appeared. It was like a shadow over my eyes were closed. And I'm like, whoa, a cloud must have come in front of the sun. And I opened them and it was my dad and he had a post-it note that he handed me and it just had an address, a woman's name, and a time. Like, go see this woman. I wish I could remember her name, but go see Anne at 9 a.m. this random address that I'd never heard of. I definitely was not a part of town that I was familiar with. And so I did what he asked me to do. I got in my car the next morning. I went over to see her and I'm like pulling into this warehouse. And I'm like, what is this? This doesn't look like a store or an office. This is very strange. A lot of 18-wheeler trucks. I mean, it was, very industrial. So I go into this warehouse and there's forklifts everywhere and it was hot, no air conditioning. And the woman that I was set to meet came to the office door and she had a cigarette, a really long one, I will, add, like a 110. I don't even know if they make those. And it was dangling from her lip. And she's like, oh, yep, we got a job for you. Come back tomorrow, 7 a.m. You're going to be on the first shift. And I was like, what am I going to be doing? And she said, you're going to be helping us with the cigarette recall. And so what that meant was that I was going to be sitting in a warehouse helping to sort and deal with this huge recall of cigarettes that had gone out from Philip Morris. So I was in Virginia, which I am now, it's the home of tobacco and all of that stuff. The industry historically has come out of Virginia. And they had to recall a huge shipment of cigarettes that had gone all over the world that had given people strep throat like symptoms. And so it was this massive process of going and retrieving them from all of the retail outlets where they were being sold. And then cataloging all of them and then storing them in the warehouse. And so, yeah, that's what I did for the summer. And let me tell you, it was an eye-opening experience. I mean, there was all kinds of crazy stuff going on in the warehouse and just a whole different, slice of life than I had been used to. And at the end of the summer, they said, do you want to stay and continue working with us here? And I had never had a better reason to go to college in my entire life.
I also love that your dad was helping you to get a job in the cigarette industry, his young daughter. That's probably not as a usual situation, but again, being in the tobacco belt. Did you get any perks like free cigarettes out of that job?
Well, I mean, the cigarettes in this particular warehouse were hurting people. I mean, they were like really, they're like bad. They had like chemicals in them and stuff. Right. And so, I mean, that was part of the hilarity of the whole thing was that like there was two people from the warehouse that stole cigarettes and went and tried to sell them. Super smart move, like on a median strip about a mile from the warehouse itself. And everyone went out to get lunch at the Burger King because there was really only like one place to eat lunch in this area. And they would drive by employees trying to sell cigarettes to drivers at stoplights. And that led to them being fired pretty quickly thereafter. But No, so there were no perks like free cigarettes. You know, my dad didn't tell me anything about this job. And I have since learned that, you know, it's kind of this thing that parents look forward to being able to do. They look forward to being able to throw their child into the worst possible job that they can think of to build character. And my dad's friend was involved in this warehouse. I don't really remember what his involvement was. He certainly didn't work for the cigarette company, but I think may have been involved with leasing the company the warehouse space. And so my dad, he won't exactly confirm this, but he's never denied it, that he specifically went and tried to hunt down a job for me that was going to be less than glamorous because, you know, he didn't want me to be sitting around having this, you know, like privileged summer of not doing anything. And, you know, instead of saying, well, maybe I can try to find you a job like in an office of a bank or a, you know, somewhere, something that was more, you know, white collar, he was like, nope, you're going to the warehouse. And, you know, I'm certainly thankful that he did. I mean, I'll remember that summer for like the rest of my life.
Well, pivoting to more of your professional background and making the assumption that most of your listeners might know a little bit about your professional past and coming from more of a traditional journalistic background, going back to those days, what was one of your most memorable writing assignments?
Well, I don't know if I've told you about Sanders versus Scent.
What was that?
Sanders versus Scent is what I call this incident, this particular assignment.
Sanders versus Scent.
Versus Scent.
This is new for me, and I'm extremely intrigued.
There was a movie that came out in 2008. It's called Frost Nixon, and it was about a journalist and his ongoing interviews of Nixon. And it was sort of thought of as like this great journalistic feat that he got all this information out of the sort of fallen president and everything. Well, so right about the time that that movie was out and about and people were talking about it, I got an assignment to go interview 50 Cent. My friends and I were joking the whole time that it was like Sanders Scent versus, you know, and we'd been thinking about Frost Nixon.
How did I never know this?
I know, just picture me, picture, you know, 30-year-old me cruising in to interview Fitty. And I will say that the story that came out of it was not a great story. It was really bad. And it was the dumbest, like, piece of news ever. It was about his cologne line was launching. But for me, it was a really memorable interview because I was so nervous. And one thing that I've noticed about celebrities, and I've interviewed a couple over the years, but for some reason, he had this stare that was just so, I mean, it was like a tractor beam kind of. And it was really hard for me to think of what I was going to say next. I had spent so many years interviewing people that I didn't expect to be put in that off guard, you know, insecure place. And I think some celebrities, there's something some people have, it's a charisma, and it just is kind of mesmerizing. So I had this interesting interview with him because I was like off my game and there was really no reason to be because it wasn't even a serious interview. But that is one thing I will never forget.
I had no idea that you had that in your back pocket. I'm really impressed. All right. So you got into the podcasting realm a couple of years ago, and I imagine your listeners curious as to why you shifted your energies into podcasting. Like, what did you find most appealing about podcasting as a platform to explore everything you're getting into with Fest?
Well, you were there at the very beginning of me looking into podcasts as the next phase, so to speak, of what I wanted to do. I mean, we were sitting at a dinner party. I mean, I remember that really distinctly. We were sitting at the table and I had been working for a startup in San Francisco that no longer exists that had ties to all of this Fest stuff. And the company was named Motivive. I loved the whole premise of it. They were going to help charitable groups and philanthropic groups and nonprofits get paid through clothing drives that were carried out online, essentially. And I mean, I was just taken with the whole premise of it, but I don't know if you remember back then. I mean, you may not. I don't know how much I talked about it, but I worked at that company for about a year as a consultant. And then I ended up working there full time for about half a year. At a certain point, it just became clear that it wasn't going to be a good fit anymore. And I decided to leave that job and I transitioned out of it. And I was thinking about what I was going to do next. And I'd slowly started to go back into media. But I had promised myself that I wouldn't just start covering things and reporting about stuff with no real purpose, because I knew I had left media for a reason anyway. I felt like that was my opportunity to figure it out. So as I was taking the time to quote unquote try to figure that out, and I was writing less and I didn't have any major commitments because I had just left this other job, I started listening to a lot of podcasts. I mean, it's really, I was walking around all the time listening to them, and anytime I was running errands and, you know, I was exercising and just everything I was trying to do to go through that process of figuring out the quote unquote next phase, oftentimes I had a podcast that I was consuming, and I realized that I like the medium more than any other type of media that I've ever consumed in my life. And I love books, but I would say that I like listening to podcasts even more than I like reading a good fiction book. And that sounds weird to me to say, because I think I'm supposed to like fiction books and really great, you know, nonfiction stuff, you know, more than podcasts. But it's just, you know, when I looked at what I was choosing to spend my time doing, I was just really taken with them. And so I thought, well, what is it that I could do that involved a podcast that would be really valuable to people? And I kept thinking, hey, you know, all of these conversations about the way apparel fits into our lives really need to be elevated in today's world. I mean, I think the way that we all interact with clothing and the way that the fashion industry is run, which I'd watched for years just from the media side and writing stories about it, and it's one of the biggest disconnects that we have in society today. I mean, people are very quick to talk about food and very educated when they go to the grocery store oftentimes about where their food comes from and what it does to the rest of the world when it's produced a certain way or produced this other way. And nobody really spends very much time talking about that from a fashion or apparel perspective. And so, you know, you and I were sitting there at that dinner party that night, and I think there was maybe some like wine involved. And I was like, I want to do a podcast. And, you know, you were like, I'll do a podcast. And then we ended up doing Underclothes. I mean, that's really how it started. That was the beginning of this idea about Fest and what the spirit of 608 became. And if you want to talk about why, you know, Underclothes was what it was and why Spirit of 608 is different, I mean, that's like a little bit of a different story, but I'm happy to go into that.
They are quite different. But, you know, going into Underclothes, and I can speak from my perspective and assuming you share some of this same sentiment, you know, we didn't know exactly what we were getting into, you know, like every new endeavor, a bit naive as to how much work was required, most on your in the editing process. And that maybe we thought sit down and just have these great conversations and hit record, and you know, it was going to flow and everything would work out pretty seamlessly. Knowing that that, of course, was not the case, and the hours upon hours that you would have to spend editing those shows. And what did you really learn, or what did you take from the Underclothes experience and bring into Spirit of 608? Or, you know, what did you learn, I guess, either to do that helped you then create Spirit of 608 in the way that you wanted to?
Oh my gosh, I learned so much stuff. I mean, first, it's the key thing that I learned is that I still loved podcasting. I'm obsessed with the medium. I'm really, you know, still very much devoted to it, which I think going through the experience of doing Underclothes, if there had been any way to put a chink in that whole wall, you know what I mean? It would have happened, because it really was hard to figure out how to edit this audio and how to produce the shows. And, you know, like you said, we didn't really know what we were doing. We were kind of like, oh, you know, two girls with a mic and a dream. And we just sort of did it casually, and it was great. But do you like that? A mic and a dream.
A mic and a dream and a few glasses of wine.
It was nice. And I mean, we had so much fun, and we had these fun conversations. And then I started to realize, well, as I was getting back into working full time on my media career and looking at the fact that I needed to turn what I was doing into more of a business, I realized that I needed to come up with a format that would not only have a monetization element to it, and not to say that I started the Spirit of 608 to make money, because that certainly would be a hilariously ridiculous reason to start a podcast. Just for anybody listening, it's not a good business model. You know, it's like saying you're going to start a blog to make money, like some people do. And there's a lot of steps between that and it actually happening. But I knew I needed something that I could produce weekly that had a format, and the format stayed the same. And I mean, you know, roughly the same, and that was going to be of interest to an audience that would be motivated to tune into it regularly. Like it had to have some element of motivational or actionable content, so to speak. And I got that from listening to a lot of other shows and realizing that, I mean, there's audiences that listen to podcasts because they like hearing a story or they like being entertained. But the real hardcore listeners are ones that are coming because they're getting valuable information out of it. They're getting tips, or they're learning something, or they're increasing their skills. And that's the kind of show that I wanted to create. And I also knew that I had to do it by myself, because I knew that the only way that I'd be able to produce it would be if I was only dealing with my schedule, you know, and my sort of way of structuring it. And so I knew that I had all of those parameters, and I knew that I wanted to support female entrepreneurs. And so that's what it became. Really, the Fest idea, the way, I mean, talking about it as Fest, came a little bit later as I was putting the show together. I was doing all these pitches, and I interviewed probably, I think I did like 35 different recorded interviews before the show even launched. As I was going out and pitching these people, I had to do a lot of explaining about what the show was, because you go to someone and you're like, hey, will you come on my podcast that does not yet exist, and you're a CEO of a company, and I just want you to trust me here. A lot of times they ask for some additional info. And I kept saying, well, it's really about the intersection of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. And sometimes I would say fashion and sustainability and entrepreneurship and tech. And over time, I just kept saying it the same way. And one day, as I was typing like the 1 millionth email to describe what it was I was working on to somebody, I just happened to be staring off into space, kind of vaguely looking at the email. And I'm like, wow, that makes a really cool acronym. And it happens to be FEST. And FEST is something that, you know, I think it makes sense to people that are interested in style. And I didn't mean it as a play on festival style in any way, but you know, it's just, it seemed to be a good word for this audience. And so I was like, that's it, done. And I went with it.
So Haley, if you're listening, you rock for doing that. And don't worry, someday I will get your poop emoji comments on the show. Never fear. At this point, I'd like to move on to what is a really special part of the show for me, because it involves people in the Spirit of 6to8 family. I say that because not everybody you're going to hear from is really so much in the listening audience, but everybody is part of what makes the Spirit of 6to8 continue on. And you'll understand why as I introduce each person. In some cases, there's a comment. In some cases, there's a question. And, you know, really, with anything like this, it's the other people in your life that make it possible. And so I hope bringing this into the conversation is a reflection of that. And I can't thank all of the people who called in and asked questions enough for participating. One thing I think is kind of weirdly, hilariously funny is that everybody in this segment, except for one, has a name that starts with an L. And my name starts with an L. And then the one person whose name does not start with an L's name starts with an S. And my last name starts with an S. So I don't know. Think about that for a while. First up, we have Lindsay Down. She's the founder of Pure Color Baby. It's an organic baby wear line based out of Canada. Lindsay has been a supporter from the very like early days of the Spirit of 6to8. We connected over Instagram. She was one of our sort of beta companies when we were first figuring out how to bring media help to Fest brands. And she has continued to be very much a supporter of the show. And I'm so glad I've gotten to know her over the years. So here we go. Here's Lindsay.
This is Lindsay from Pure Color Baby. I am a huge fan of the show. I've been listening for a long time, and I've learned so much, which has been really helpful for my little business. I do have a question. Recently, we did a local event, and it was for International Women's Week, and there was a lot of female vendors there and companies. It was really great. And there was a person from our local news station that was wandering around with the camera filming some of the vendors, and she walked back and forth past our booth a couple of times, and I kind of tried to make eye contact with her or grab her attention, but with no luck. What I'm wondering is, what would be the proper etiquette to get that person's attention to potentially be part of their little segment that they are filming, and kind of how would I go about that? Or is it something that I should have contacted the media outlet prior to the event to let them know that I would be interested in being interviewed or being on camera? Thanks so much. And you can find our brand online at purecolorbaby.com and purecolorbaby on Instagram. Thanks.
Okay. Hey, Lindsay. So thank you for this question. Great question. I think it's one that, you know, so many people can relate to. Yes, in an ideal world, you would have reached out to the journalists before the event, maybe a week or two, maybe 10 days before. A way to do this is to look and see who has covered an event before, if it's an annual event or something that happens regularly. You can often look online and see which journalists in your area have actually come out and written features or mentions in the past. And if you see those, if they are available, then send them a quick email. Say, hey, I'm going to be participating in this. I noticed you covered it in the past. I'd love to invite you to stop by my booth. Or if there's any way I can be a resource for you and stories you're working on, I'd love to chat and introduce you to my brand as well as others in the community who might be great sources for you in the future. Now, if you're not able to do that, there is no coverage, you don't have time, you forget, it doesn't occur to you, whatever, you show up at the event, you're there, and you see the media in the middle of reporting a story. Well, I know it can be difficult if you are a vendor somewhere or an exhibitor and you have a booth to manage. But if there's any way that you can hop out from behind the place that you're standing and where you're sort of positioned in the event or the exhibition hall, you want to go and go up to the person, obviously not while they're right in the middle of talking to somebody or filming, but see if you can get a moment, say, hey, you know, I noticed that you're filming. I don't want to interrupt you, but I just wanted to say that if you need any help with your story, I'd love to be a resource for you. I keep going back to this. I'd love to be a resource for you. And there's obviously many different ways to do it, and what to say is going to come down to what your personality is. But I think if you can go up and have the approach of, hey, I'm somebody here and I'm connected to a lot of the vendors and I'm part of the event. If there's any way that I can be helpful in what you're trying to produce, then I would love to do that. You know, a lot of people will sort of barrel in and say, oh my gosh, I would love to tell you more about our brand. Well, media aren't there to write about your brand. They're there to write about the event as a whole. So that is something that I think is very much okay to do and a good idea. Another thing that a lot of brands in the past that I've encountered at events have done is that they've actually, prior to the event, gone through the organizers and said, will there be media attending? If so, are you facilitating interviews? And oftentimes the organizers will have somebody on hand whose job it is to actually connect exhibiting or participating brands and speakers and things like that with the media who are going to be attending. So it sort of depends a little bit on the event itself, how it's set up, who's running it, and how many, you know, people they have on their team and all of that. But if there's absolutely nothing like that going on and the media are just there, you can pretty much count on the fact that they're looking for great people to talk to, or at least they should be. And if you can get up there and just, without making them feel like you're giving them a sales pitch, present yourself as somebody that might be able to help them create an even better story, then yeah, that's what you got to do. Put yourself out there and good luck with your next event. Next, we have a comment and a question from Lucia of Malia Designs. Thank you so much for calling in, Lucia, by the way. And just so listeners know, I'm totally obsessed with their yoga bags, so I hope you'll check them out. But, you know, just like Lindsay, she has been a supporter and part of the Spirit of 608 fam since many, many months ago. Earlier, like last spring, she was also one of the beta companies that we worked with as we were developing what Prestope would become. So I've so enjoyed getting to know your brand, and I know others will too. And now on to her comment and question.
Hey, Lorraine, it's Lucia from Malia Designs, and you can find Malia Designs online at maliadesigns.com, and our Instagram is Malia Designs Fair Trade. But yeah, really have enjoyed the podcast. Congrats on 100 episodes. That's awesome. Just a comment. One of my, I think the things that I find the most valuable and enjoy the most is that, like, kind of the wide tent that you encompass with entrepreneurship, sustainability, sustainability and tech, and how like some of the most inspiring stories are from brands and people that I would have never come across otherwise. And yeah, it's just been so great listening to you. Love your authentic voice and your sense of humor. And then my question for you, is there a guest that you have been like super nervous to interview? And like, what have you done since the launch of the podcast to hone in on your interviewer skills? Because yeah, you're great. So thanks and congrats again on 100 episodes. Bye.
Yeah, so funny you should ask about nervousness. I get nervous before pretty much every single interview that I do. And I don't really know why. I get nervous that I'm not going to know what to say, or we're not going to connect, or that I'm going to be too tired in the middle of it and I'm going to start spacing out, or, you know, that listeners aren't going to get something from it, or the sound is going to drop. I mean, my head spins, but then when I get into the actual conversation, over the years of writing about people and doing interviews for years and years, I developed a technique. I don't know if it's a technique, but a habit. And that is sort of a mental gymnastics thing where once I start talking to somebody, I do my best to remove what's going on in my mind from the conversation. Like I silence the voices in my head. I take my ego out of the equation and I just listen to what they're saying. And I focus on the response and what the conversation is going to be as we continue talking. So I try to look a little bit ahead to where we're going and have that be the only stuff in my mind. None of the insecure thoughts, none of the evaluating thoughts, none of the things about who they are and who I am. I just try to flip the lights off on everything else that is going on and just be in that conversation right then and there. And then that sort of goes into the second thing you asked, which is how have I tried to improve interviewing people? And I, you know, probably the best thing for me, the most helpful thing, is really listening to other people do interviews and how they've approached conversations, and also trying to remember that it's not always about what you say, but about what you don't say. So when you're interviewing, it's just as important to say things that push the conversation along as it is to sometimes delete, or, you know, mentally delete, because we don't delete much out of the conversations except for ums and extra likes and things like that, but to mentally delete a lot of stuff that you were going to say. And it often makes the conversation better and smoother, and less is more, you know, not only in fashion, but also in interviewing, I think. But thank you for the question, and so love what you and Malia Designs do. Next is Shannon of Factory 45. She is not only a super inspiring person in the fest space, but she's also a biz buddy of mine and a former show guest. So you can find her interview in the archives. I would encourage you to check that out and learn more about what she does to help founders grow sustainable, made in the USA brands from the start. Now on to her question.
Hi, Lorraine. Congrats on your 100th episode. That's amazing. I can't even imagine. You must be so excited. My question for you is, I guess, a silly one, but I really want to know, how did you make the little video for your Instagram? I absolutely love it, and I want to make one for Factory 45. And as you know, I'm Shannon from Factory 45. Everyone else can find me on Instagram at Factory45CO. Thanks, Lorraine.
Hey, Shannon, thanks for the question. So yeah, that was my little trick to try to continue to have quotes on my Instagram feed, but not to just have the quote images, because whenever I see somebody else doing something like a whole lot, or it just becomes like a thing where your feed is flooded, then I like don't want to do it anymore. It's like this weird contrarian part of me. So yeah, the videos, actually my super secret trick, her name is Chris Jo, and she helps me with all kinds of graphics and video stuff for The Spirit of 628, and she's amazing. And we did an episode around Thanksgiving week last year that had interviews with everyone on The Spirit of 628 team. So anybody listening, if you want to learn more about Chris Jo and the work that she does, you can listen to that episode. But if you don't have a Chris Jo in your life who knows how to do cool things with video and animate quotes, you can try an app, one of two apps. One is called Ripple, R-I-P-L, and another is called Legend. And both of them allow you to do animation within images and short videos that you can then share on social media. Both of them are paid apps, and I believe Ripple is a monthly, something around like a $9 or $10 a month, and then Legend is a one-time fee. And I've heard a lot of people have success using both of those to spruce up a lot of their images. So I hope that that helps. And I will see you on your Instagram feed soon. For the last two comments and closing out the show, we're going to hear from two women who I call my podcasting buddies. They're in a group. There are four of us who have a podcast meeting of the minds every week. And it has been just a wonderful experience. We're four women in three countries and in three different time zones. And what they have brought to the Spirit of 608 is just, I can't even, it's unquantifiable. But thank you to Lena and Lisa, and also Jennifer, who is also part of the group and is amazing as well. And first, we're going to hear from Lena, who did not even mention the name of her podcast, Lena, but she is actually the premier podcaster in the shipping industry, like globally. She has the top podcast about what's happening in shipping and innovation in that space and how they can change the shipping industry in the future. So I have a lot of respect and admiration for what she does. And Lena, thank you for the comment, and you will hear my answer to your question. And then we will go into Lisa, the fabulous powerhouse podcaster behind Fertility Friday. For those of you out there who are interested in fertility, fertility awareness, Lisa is the woman. You got to go listen to her. And she has helped so many women through that phase of their lives where they had a lot of questions and they weren't sure how to get the information they needed. So check out her show as well. Ladies, thank you so much for being a part of my 100th episode.
Hi, Lorraine. This is Magda Åsberg calling from Sweden. Congratulations on your 100th episode of your podcast. I'm totally impressed. My question to you as a fellow podcaster is, how do you keep podcasting? How do you keep going? What makes you continue to make that next episode and the next and the next? Keep up the good job. I know that you've got a lot of people following what you're doing. The best of luck with everything.
Lena, I don't know. I guess to answer your question, the thing I have to say is, for me, it's not so much a question of like how I keep going, but how I could possibly not. You know, it's such a part of my life these days, and it's a medium that I feel truly compatible with in terms of how I want to communicate and what I want to communicate and how it communicates with people. And I just feel in my groove with it. And I also really enjoy it. And I don't have too much of a struggle continuing. It's more of a struggle to figure out how to carve out the time is actually the issue. And so that's really what I'm working on these days is making sure that the time to do this is built into the business in an integral way, and that the podcast itself helps to further the business, because otherwise it becomes harder and harder to do it. And so, that's really it for me. And I know I would actually love to hear your answer to this question, because you are also coming up on major milestone episodes this year. So thank you for all of your help and insight and support over the last months and year as the show has grown into what it is today.
Hi, Lorraine. This is Lisa from FertilityFriday.com. I wanted to just wish you the very best and congratulate you for reaching 100 episodes. It is just such an incredible achievement that you've been going for this long. And I think it's an incredible milestone that you've hit. So I wanted to congratulate you and wish you the very best. So here's to the next 100.
Thank you, Lisa. You're super sweet as always, and I always appreciate how you keep me accountable and call me on my BS when I have it. So Lisa's comment seems like a great place to end this super long show. As I usually say, done and done. Thank you for listening all the way to the end of the 100th episode of the Spirit of 608 podcast. I could not have done it without all of you who are listeners. I can't tell you how much I appreciate your ears and your support and your thoughts and just being in the Spirit of 608 world and in my life. And if you love what we do, I got to say it. It always helps if you subscribe, rate, or review us in iTunes. And I hope you will join me next time for another conversation with a woman at the forefront of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. As you know, I call it FEST, and it's the future.